Tom, I'm hearing a lot of buzz about this thing in the Washington Post today. What did you think of it?
I thought it was interesting, especially in the way it was timed. It seems to have really hit a nerve because federal employees, of course, are feeling a little besieged at this point. And one of them, a career Foreign Service officer, Jason Ulner, wrote an op-ed piece in the Washington Post essentially firing back and saying, hey, all of you who are denigrating public servants, what about, you know, people who are working overtime at jobs around the world and serving in Afghanistan and doing all kinds of things and food safety and the whole nine yards, and really saying, you know, please stop picking on federal employees. And we've gotten tons of response to it, and I know you have too.
Yeah, I was surprised at how soon this morning the emails started coming into my inbox with people saying, hey, I read this, and this is something you should talk about on the radio. This is the kind of thing, though, that you and I have talked about before. This is a quote from Jason Ulner's piece. He's a career Foreign Service officer. He's writing this in the Washington Post. When I hear our politicians talking about fixing Washington, I often wonder to myself, whom would they like to fix? Is it the guy I see on the metro every day heading to work at the FDA to ensure our food is safe? Is it the woman going into Commerce Department headquarters to support U.S. companies abroad? Or do they mean the thousands of people who support our troops overseas? And he talks a little bit about his colleagues in Foreign Service, too. And what I think you really did to help this conversation is you got a response from Congressman Dennis Ross, who's pushing one of the bills in Congress now that we have posted on our bill tracker at federalnewsradio.com that would change the benefits structure for federal employees. And Congressman Ross's response, I think, was instructive. Do you think so, too?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he starts by saying there's no doubt that many people work long hours and are dedicated public servants and do their jobs really well. But then he just immediately goes into, but there's no doubt that the taxpayer can no longer afford defined benefit pension plans, guaranteed raises, a $450 billion payroll, and a federal workforce that is out of sync in both mission and size. So he's really kind of hammering on this point that regardless of what kind of public servants you think that we have, we can no longer afford to have these things have it, and public service that costs as much as it does.
And what I think we have here then, by reading your piece, I think we have two people or two sides who maybe aren't that far off from each other and who are now starting to talk past each other. I didn't get anything from Mr. Ulner's piece that indicated that he thought that there wasn't possibly, maybe, room for understanding prioritization and maybe understanding that fiscally we're not in a position to afford everything. He just didn't go there. He was focused on the part of this equation that you and I have talked about before of the people that we have, whatever we decide they're going to do, what level of quality should they do? And he made, I think, a pretty eloquent case that the people that exist, by and large, are doing a pretty good job of executing the mission they've been given.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's where sort of the distinction lies is, you know, in this issue of, and I think a lot of the people on the Republican side and others who are saying we need to just get these costs under control would say, hey, we're not trying to denigrate public servants. Now, federal employees, I think a lot of them would say, well, you know, when you're saying you're overpaid and your benefits are too expensive, then you're telling us we're not that great. I think it doesn't make them feel that good. And I think they get, and I also feel like that they have a sort of contract for employment, even if it's not a formal contract. And that now people are coming in and trying to mess around with the terms of that contract by changing, pension contributions and those kind of things, that they've come to think that they could rely on. So I think that's where a lot of it comes in. And I also think that there's still times when the rhetoric, maybe not entirely intentionally, just gets a little bit out of control. Like Daryl Issa today has a hearing about overlap and duplication in the bureaucracy, and he puts out a statement saying, like I've always said, the enemy isn't the Democrats, the enemy isn't the Republicans, it's the bureaucracy. Well, saying the enemy is the bureaucracy, I think what he means there is it's the bureaucratic structure. But you run the risk that that kind of thing ends up sounding like civil servants are the enemy.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I'm not sure that's particularly helpful. You do, I guess, run the risk, though, of asking every single member of Congress to parse every single statement that they're going to make, and that's just not a realistic expectation. I understand what you're saying, though, about the way that people hear things as opposed to the way people say things and what they intend from the message they're putting out there.
Yeah, and I think that is important to understand, and I think a lot of people who have been critical of pay and benefits or seeking to trim them would tell you this is different from the days when the rhetoric was, oh, this is, these are just lazy, shiftless bureaucrats who are just – there is – to a certain extent, there's less of that than there was before and more of just a real focus on these pay and benefits things. But I think that's a distinction that's lost on many federal employees.
And I wonder what could happen to bring that conversation back, because I think that's a really important distinction. And I think maybe if that distinction were more forcibly made by the people who are trying to make it, you know, I think that the statements that Congressman Ross made to you were fairly reasonable, and I think it would be hard for most federal employees to read that and, first of all, take it as a punch in the mouth, and second of all, take it as terribly unreasonable, because he's not casting aspersions on the ability of any particular agency or any particular group of people or any particular pay grade or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's true to a certain extent. I also think that they would take issue with a lot of what he said in terms of his statements about the compensation of federal employees, too. And I think there's, you know, that's a whole other part of the rhetoric where, you know, people on both sides sort of cherry pick their facts. And, you know, for instance, Ross says the number of federal workers earning $150,000 or more a year has soared tenfold in the past 5 years and doubled since President Obama took office. Well, that 150, I think, is a sort of magic number that a significant number of people tipped over without having significant increases in their compensation. So it can look a little bit skewed. So I think there are those issues. There are some substantive issues relative to this whole debate over pay and benefits.
This begs the question, though, that you and I have noodled over on a number of occasions, which is, at what point do we have some kind of a big meeting of the minds about how you measure all of these components? How do you measure what agencies are doing well? How do you measure how the employees are executing on the mission and all of that? And one of the generators of that conversation might be the GAO report that you talked about today that Congressman Issa's committee heard about.
Yeah, I think that is where the rubber meets the road, is getting into those discussions about what government is doing and how it's doing and whether it's the right thing to do. And we've talked about this before. I mean, you know, a lot of this overlap and duplication, that's not the fault of the people on the front lines. That's, in many cases, the fault of Congress. You know, Congress, year after year, has these reports and hearings about how things are structured such that there's overlapping and duplicative programs. Well, Congress is responsible for that. They can address that issue tomorrow if they feel like it. And I think that one of the real problems there is there's not huge partisan divisions on that front. There's just a lot of people who don't care enough to pay attention to those kinds of nitty-gritty management issues. And that's really the core problem.
You know where I think that this whole situation manifests itself most eloquently is in the Postal Service. Take a look sometime, and you've done this before, I'm sure. Take a look sometime at the action on the floor of the House and look at how many different motions and resolutions and so on naming post offices exist. That demonstrates to me that getting a post office for a particular town is of great pride to the members of Congress. They do a lot of stuff to try to make it happen. They're going to do everything they can to keep them from closing, despite the numbers that you and I and everybody else know that the Postal Service is dealing with.
Right. There are just many, many ways in which the decisions are not rational on these fronts. And, you know, once things are established and they're in particular congressional districts, those members of Congress want to protect them. And they want to protect their areas of oversight, and they don't want to reduce things that would require them to then eliminate congressional committees, because that's committee power that goes away. So there's a whole lot of nuanced issues here.